About the Law.
Murphy's Law Podcast. Your host, Ian Murphy.
And I'm just like, this is hard for him to hold back.
There's so much I want to share.
Remove all the emotion from all of this stuff.
And they never wanted this to happen to the citizens again.
We never stop growing as an individual. Right.
All right. Welcome to this week's episode of Murphy's Law. Back again with me is a good friend of mine. Guess who's back? Tim Kroll. We had so much that we covered in the last episode that yeah, Tim was on with us. And, you know, we jokingly, it was hard for him to hold back because there was so much that we wanted to go over. But so we finally got him back. He's a busy guy. We got him back on, so we wanted to dedicate a little bit more time to what you were talking about with regards to marketing and storytelling. And I actually I don't know if you saw this, but I brought my...
You brought your Petoskey
stone.
Yeah. This one's been shaved down or cut, and then it looks like it's been polished on both sides. So.
Yep. So anyways, so what you... go ahead and
jump
go
in the middle
in,
of it? Yeah. So most of the time when I do this, I'm actually stepping up on stage and it's like kind of introduction. And what I look at is I have several rocks here, which you guys can either see. I'll hold them up, make sure. But if you're just listening to it, just trust me. Most of these rocks are... They're just kind of a grayish color. They look like you pick them up outside in your parking lot. I mean, there's a lot of people that have rock gardens just outside and whatever. So I hold these up, and they're just kind of ugly looking at first. And you kind of hold all three, four of these up. And I typically ask, does anybody want a rock? And I mean, unless you're a dedicated rock hound, and nobody wants a rock. I mean, that's something you're going to have to put in your suitcase. You're going to have to take it back home. It's going to add extra weight. Nobody wants this rock, right?
I can't believe how many rock hounds are out there.
Isn't there a lot?
Rock hounds, rock nerds, whatever you want to call them.
They're officially called rock hounds.
Our rooftop is covered in rocks, and we have rooftop access, and we go up there once in a while. And I am learning about these things, and so that's another reason why I kind of wanted to have Tim on. So I find some of these things fascinating because they're literally just laying there in front of you.
Oh, it's amazing. And so the biggest thing is, if you've ever traveled to Michigan, if you've lived here, whether you went to Traverse City, Petoskey, I mean, any of the tourist-type areas, you go into a lot of the shops, and what do you find typically is a Petoskey stone. Mm-hmm. And you find these little stones that are nice and polished. Typically, this little stone will go for $10 or $15. And it's amazing to me when I start looking at this because there's actually a pretty cool story behind this. This is a fossilized coral that was created in here back during the Ice Age kind of a thing when we had all of the ice all covering the entire state. And then we've obviously now turned into a lot more of the lakes and things. But the cool thing is this was actually a beautiful coral that was more of a, like a bluish, and sometimes it was a purple color. And as coral is, you have holes that are in between them, and that's how they feed, because the particulates go through that, and that's how they feed. So as the pieces of their coral actually went under all of the ice and everything, they started to fossilize. And the really cool thing is this one is like a light gray on one side, and on the other side it's more of a dark, kind of a really dark gray. What I'm told is that the darker the color they are, that means that there was oil or sediment that was kind of an oily base that gave it that black color. Yeah. The interesting thing is that here's, I've got this one, which is a really, really dark gray kind of a thing. And then I also have this one, which I actually picked up out of the Sturgeon River, and it's more of a brownish color. And so we have Petoskey stones that are different colors depending on the sediment that fell into the pores from the coral. And there's even ones that have like a pink hue to them. There's some that are kind of a bluish color. There's a lot of different pieces, and sometimes like some of these bigger ones, they'll actually start going up 50-60. I've got a big one that's probably about this big. It's probably a good 20 pounds. That's probably 100-150 bucks. But we see these things in these stores, and the tourists come in and they want that because they're taking a little piece. They're taking a little
they
piece
do
of Michigan.
I moved here from Las Vegas, the desert, right?
Actually, and they have some really cool rocks.
There's plenty of rocks there, but nothing like this.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think it was second or third grade when I moved out here and started learning. You cannot be in school in Michigan and not at
hear
some point learn about Petoskey stones.
Yeah. Well, and the cool thing is these are only unique to northern Michigan because of the way that the coral has built. I've only seen one other that's very, very close, which is actually down in the Bahama area in the tropics. And it's very similar in shape, but it's a different color. And wow. I would believe, and I don't know this, but I believe that's probably the same species that was fossilized, but because of the different area, the sediment that settled in it changed the color.
Changed the color.
Because there's a blue that one that sense. I've seen. Yeah, so so I don't know if that's the case or not. It's just a theory. I'm not an expert geologist or anything like that. But I like collecting rocks. And the cool thing is, too, is the fact that this is unique and special to Michigan.
Right.
You can't really get these anywhere else. So when you come to Michigan, this is something that people buy, or they scour the beaches in Petoskey. They scour scour all, everywhere that there's any a lot of traffic. You're not going to find
them. I mean, it's a big part of tourism. Yeah,
100%.
Yeah,
and you see it all over our marketing because it's a little piece of Michigan that you can take with you. It's something that you can remember the vacation. You can remember the bonding times. You can remember all of those things because you have a rock, right? And even if you're not a rock hound, they're still kind of cool. So the cool, the interesting thing is, I should say, as we look at this, is I talk all about this, and then I raise this up and I say, who would like this rock? I'm not giving it away, or who would like this rock? And I'm not giving it away, but who would like that? Man, everybody's like, I want that, I want that, I want that. I attached all of that story to this, and all of these rocks are Petoskey stones. So if I dip them in water, if we had water here, it actually would show up and you would see all the lines. This one, you can see the pockets in the top of it, so you know that it's a Petoskey stone. But then you would see the channels on the sides of it where all of the coral was actually built. Some of these you can see are actually split. There's a dark color here where the oil kind of settled and the gray color here. But again, it's not polished.
Right.
It's not pretty. But all of a sudden, I actually add and say, this is a Petoskey stone. Because of the story that I just told, suddenly this has value.
Right.
And so if I start holding these up, this one's actually really cool because it didn't get full. There's actually holes where the coral is at. And I've got several of them here that all of a sudden I attached a value. I attached a story to it. There's a memory. There's an emotional attachment to these things now. And I hold them up, and everybody wants one.
Yeah.
And it's just like that. All of a sudden, there's value.
It is... impressive to be able to take something and take that story and build around it and then create that value. That's what every person in marketing always tries to do, to set themselves out and be that Petoskey stone, you know, in the middle of everything else and try and set themselves apart. I'd like to say that we've done a little bit of that here before everything that we got involved with. You know, there are plenty of great barbecues in this state. Yeah. We don't pretend that, you know, we say we're the best damn barbecue in Michigan, but there's lots of outstanding barbecue. Yeah.
Well, that's the interesting thing. And so, like, as you look at these, I mean, we talked about the Petoskey stones, but if you're a real rock hound, you're actually going to see some of the other ones that we have here. This is a Charlevoix stone. It's a different coral, but it's a really cool looking coral. It kind of looks like a honeycomb kind of a thing. I've got what is well known in our area as a pudding stone, but these are found over. So these are really
pudding stone.
A pudding stone.
Pudding
stone. I mean, like, actually, they say there's golden diamonds in the middle of these because the glaciers all pushed this together and created. Anyway,
we spend too much time on the probably according to my wife. She won't actually tell me, but we spend a lot of time on the golf course, and so there's just a joke now when everybody. Anybody finds a pudding stone.
Yeah, yeah.
Pudding stone.
This is petrified wood. And I've got some nice pieces from some sediment ridges areas where the trees, full trees, turned into stones. And then I even have some copper. Now, this is actually from Michigan because there's a lot of copper in Michigan. Mm-hmm. That's where we get our pictured rocks. There's a lot of sediment that comes down from the minerals. So there's a lot of cool things about this. And so often we walk right over them because we don't see the value that's right there. Yeah. You know, and that's what happens within our marketing is we walk right past because we don't see the value. We don't relate to the story. We don't have that connection, or we're not, and it really is an emotional connection. So all of these things, as we kind of look at this, and I put this is where we're going to kind of switch into the aspect of the marketing. It really is, how do you attach the emotional value? Because it's an emotional attachment, emotional value that causes people to act.
We're seeing that definitely now in the last, it's over 2 years now. It'll be 2 years in the middle of March. We didn't really stand up until November of 2021 when we decided to say enough is enough.
Yeah.
Risk it for the brisket, all that stuff that most people are kind of familiar with. But we have found that they're really, and probably the election had a lot to do with it, a lot of other things that stem from the election. But we took a stand, found that a lot of people supported us. Mm-hmm. A lot more people were a little timid to show support because of a lot of the fear factor that was going on, a lot of the unknowns and question marks and stuff. But we found that we all of a sudden had this very emotional connection to our audience, even those
passionate
that had
emotional.
Never
yeah.
been here,
yeah.
never had our barbecue, but just merely for us standing up against right. tyranny. And, you know, that word is thrown around a lot lately, but mm-hmm. people really need to start paying attention to it.
Yeah.
But we found that emotional connection is incredible. And we had a concert that people came to in the freezing cold in January.
I remember that, yeah.
You know, I mean, among a ton of other things that we are incredibly grateful for that we never, ever... I mean, that was not the intention of any of this. I made a joke to a friend of mine the other day. You know, if I had intended, if I this was what I was actually going for, I'd be a marketing genius.
Yeah.
So it has really opened my eyes to the emotional aspect of that portion of marketing versus just, hey, here's a sandwich that's really good.
I love that you're saying that. But I think we need to define how you use these stories.
Yes.
Because there's basically a choice that you have to make as a marketer, as a business owner. And then I would also, there's two parts of this. The one that is doing the marketing and then the one that is consuming the marketing, mm-hmm. right? So there's two parts. The one that is doing the marketing, if you don't have a moral base, you will manipulate based off of the stories, based off of the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
With a moral base, it's more... now an influence, because what really marketing is you want to help people. You want mm-hmm. to help them connect with what they're actually feeling, and you want to solve that problem. Somebody that is does not have them or has their own a self-centered agenda, they're going to be more manipulative.
Sure.
And they're going to use stories to put that fear in an individual. Okay, so that's that side. On the opposite side, I would almost say it's like a consumer beware. Because there is a ton of marketing that's going out. There's a ton of propaganda that's going out. Mm-hmm. And we can see that across the board, whether it's in something that you're purchasing that you may not need, or it's something that they want you to vote a certain way. And politics are going to play in here, obviously, because sure. there's a lot of marketing that goes into politics.
Yeah.
That goes way back even before. Like my first recollection was Ronald Reagan. That was my first real memory of an election.
Mm-hmm.
And even back then, they were still doing the emotional type marketing where they were still, and it's been the case. Every 4 years, you get hit with it. Now, here's the interesting thing. When you raise the fear level or you raise the emotional level and you can't sustain the logic behind that, you have to increase the emotion in order to be able to have action.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So as you're looking at this stuff, and this is what's really, really interesting. So we take this to a business perspective. And let me just pause. I'm going to give you the different, the couple of the emotions that are key. The two that are the most influential is fear and security. Those are the two that are going to get you almost every time. The third one, which has a lot of influence, is the excitement. You see that after your team wins the ball game.
Sure.
And immediately after, I can't believe every time you watch the Super Bowl, hey, your team just won the game. Here's all this stuff that you need to buy. And everybody's buying it because yep. there's a lot of excitement about it. Like, yeah, we won. We're the champ. You know, like there's a lot of excitement that goes into that. Then you have convenience and you have opportunity, which are very kind of, they're similar, but they're different. Opportunity is, hey, discounted kind of a thing. Scarcity, like you can buy this now, but it will not be available. That's the opportunity.
Right.
Convenience is when we go through the grocery store and we see all the stuff right next to the shelves.
Yeah.
You know, like sometimes that has more value right next to the cash register than the entire rest of the retail space. Because
yep.
people are right there, they see it and they buy it because it's convenient.
We have people that pay 30% more for our food just because they can get it through DoorDash.
Yeah. It's crazy.
That's crazy.
Isn't it crazy? I mean,
it's
like
crazy.
So that's a whole nother conversation. But those are the five that are an emotional connection, right? And so as you look at that, you want to be able to tell the story. So here, if we actually dissect exactly what that story was, it's really a memory that's creating a secure environment.
Yeah, okay.
Right? Or it is an excitement, like, I remember when I went to Michigan, and I remember the good times that we have. So there's a little bit of an excitement going on there. And people will buy based off of that. There's really not a fear aspect when it comes to this. It's not going to, like, crack you in the head or something.
Right.
There's really no fear here. But as I was teaching and doing a lot of sales training, we would start to learn the stories that would trigger people to act.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a window salesman, and some of this stuff I kind of regret, and I was like, I had to change my ways because it's like
you
I
were a window salesman.
I was a window salesman. I was not a. Not,
were you really? I didn't know really that. Was. I mean, not that I know your entire resume.
Yeah,
but.
I know, but I actually was the head trainer for the window company in New York. I was the lead trainer for them, so I.
Okay, so it was in New York. It wasn't in Michigan.
No, it was not. Okay. In it was in New York.
I did some sale. I did some window sales for a mid-Michigan window company, and
so
and
we sold. We
learned
sold
some great things, but some very scrupulous things at the same time.
Exactly, and I'll give you my turning point and why I stopped. And but we were selling windows that were like $1,500, $2,000. Now they were really great windows, mm-hmm. and they really did a lot. But we would tell stories about how some of the windows that they had in their current home were not safe. And, you know, and then you bring up the whole point of a fire, and if your kids can't get out because the windows expand, and there's a whole kind of a story that goes into that, you can't get up to them, and so the dads are like, there's a fear aspect that I'm going to lose my family if I don't put these windows in.
Right.
There's a security aspect because our windows, they were basically burglar-proof the way it was. And so the people couldn't break in. So there's a security aspect. Uh-huh. We could actually play in on that emotion, and we could manipulate the sale for this higher price window. Now, my turning point, and I'll just be honest because I did the manipulation part of it. My turning point was when I had a guy sit across the table from me, look me in the eyes and says, you got me, but you'll never get me again. And I was like, oh. I will never sail another window again. Like, I will not. Because I just couldn't do it. I mean, like, that was my conscience and my moral aspect of it because I just couldn't do it. So there is this whole idea that you can manipulate people to act with fear, with security, or even with excitement.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't do it based on a moral aspect and you don't do it based with a lot of logic and things that are going behind it, man, it's not good. It's not good.
Selling windows based on fear. That was our
dude, there's a lot of stories I can tell you about that aspect.
That's incredible because when I did it, it mainly was, so there was tax incentives given out for upgrading and energy efficiencies. This had been 2007, 2008, 2009, right, right. Somewhere around there.
That's the logic side of the window selling, by
so
the way.
So that was what, and there was even some stuff in there that we targeted some neighborhoods that, you know, they were more, let's just say they were more likely to purchase their windows on a payment plan, which the company I worked for, you know, was kind of incentivized to set those deals up versus cash deals, yada, yada, whatever. So it was more of a kind of buy now, get the incentive before it runs out. And then
it's a little bit of scarcity.
So a little bit of scarcity in there, the, you know, get it while you can. And then the tax incentive portion and this, that. It's just, I don't know.
So our job.
I just can't imagine selling on fear. That.
Well, here's
that's
the
incredible.
Parameters.
I never thought about that.
Yeah. So here's the parameters. Typically, the average sale was around $10,000 to $15,000 for a whole house full of windows, which is pretty pricey.
Yeah.
We would get people to sign the contract and give us like a third down deposit that night.
Oh, yeah.
Within 2 hours, 3 hours, we could actually have that sale because we could raise the emotion. Now, the key is, and there's logic that goes on behind that, and they have to know that they can afford it, but we could raise the emotion to be able to get them to act on a $10,000 to $15,000 sale. You think about how much emotion has to be involved for somebody to commit to you to give 10 to 15 to 20. I had one, I think it was a $25,000 sale. The guy wrote me a check for a third right there. Handed me the third of the money right there that
good
night.
Job.
Well, no.
That's what I mean. It's like.
But that's what I'm saying is like I did that. And I got to understand how powerful those emotions are.
Right.
And I realized just because you have the power doesn't mean you should be using it. Right. And you shouldn't actually take that power and start manipulating people. And that's frankly what
we're
seeing.
Did you ever sell Kirby vacuums?
No, but I had the opportunity to. And I didn't like the guy that was my guy, my lead guy. And I thought he was going to stiff me on my commission, so that's why I didn't sell Kirby vacuums. But it's the same thing.
It's a lot of the same thing. There's actually some brilliant things that they do in their training system. But again, you know, some of the same situations. So, you know, I did it in the mid-Michigan area. And, you know, they would target some of the reservations.
Yeah.
Cash deals is kind of what they were looking for.
Yep.
Sell the demo vacuum out of the back of the van that was carrying three or four sales reps, and it's kind of like, whose turn is it now to go knocking on doors?
Yep. I mean,
just crazy kind of stuff.
But that just shows you the power of what you can do with stories.
Yeah.
and then tying that together with the emotions, mm-hmm. right? I mean, so if somebody is afraid of losing, so the fear of a loss, the fear of something that's going to happen, that bad, ominous thing that's going out there, that will influence people. It will get them to act.
Sure.
No doubt that it will.
Yeah.
But it's now, how are you going to use those? How are you going to use that to be able to get them to see? And so the positive aspect of this is, and I've used fear before in a positive way, because you can do this and say, if you don't change, your wife is going to leave you. Your kids are going to be gone. Like that's a positive, because you need to change. You need to become a better individual. You need to have some personal growth. And by that time, usually the guy is in tears, who I'm counseling or coaching or whatever. By that time, he's in tears because he realizes basically the whole life is flashing before him. And he's like, I need to change, because he has that intense fear of loss.
Yeah.
Now, the key is now you have to put the accountability in place, and you've got to have the logic behind it. And there's always that two-step, the emotional and the logic. But the first step is, what stories can you tell, whether it's within your industry or with those that you're influencing, what stories can you tell to bring out the emotion so people can feel and see themselves in that exact position? And that's what's happened with Iron Pig over the last 2 years.
Yeah, you know, the best way that people have been connecting with us in an emotional way really has obviously coming here to visit the store mm-hmm. from hours away, lots of messages. We are sending out T-shirts all over the place, all over the globe. People are buying shirts, never been here, probably never will get a chance to come here. But their way of showing their support for us is through this sort of tactile thing, a T-shirt or a hat. You probably can't see them, but we've got hats aligned here around. So that is that portion of that emotional tie, and we're going to try and take it a step further that I actually haven't told you about.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting on pins and needles here. Like, uh-oh.
So we've talked about dropping an NFT.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we're working on that right now. We should have that going in the next 30 days. We do have a big announcement coming up April 1st that we keep talking about. It does just happen to be April Fool's Day.
This is actually going to be kind of funny depending on what that
we are.
Is.
You know, we're giving away two gift cards, a $100 gift card for the correct answer of what the announcement is going to be. So you got to kind of be specific. And then a $100 gift card for the best wrong answer, funniest wrong answer sort of thing. We've had some really funny interactions with that. But, you know, that's people want to participate in a lot of this stuff that we have going on. You know, the reviews that we get a ton of great positive reviews. There's always a couple here and there that we like to call out, but I don't even know where I was really going with that. But, NFT is an extension of a way for our fans, our audience, if you will, to participate in what we're doing. And I don't want to get down. We're going to have a couple of new episodes talking about, you know, the basics of NFTs and how they can purchase our NFT.
Right.
But that is one of the things that we are looking at towards the future, and how people can participate in, I don't like to use the word movement, but others have coined it, you know, a movement and what we have going on, risk it for the brisket, all this other stuff.
I like the word tribal.
Yeah,
because the tribal aspect of that is you are creating stories around a specific tribe and a specific type of it's just a storyline. I mean, it really comes down to it's actually a storyline. The interesting thing, I haven't told you this, but because when I posted back, 2 years ago about you guys are going to stay open, you're kind of fighting the system and all this, I had one guy from Minnesota, one guy from Pennsylvania, one guy from Georgia. They all bought gift certificates here, and they sent them to me. I had like $300 worth of gift certificates from people all over. They just sent them to me like, I'm never going to go there, but here it is. So that way we can support them. So it was kind of funny. But that story is what, I mean, it motivated people into action, right? Because they were like, I need security, and I think that was one of the biggest keys that you guys played in on, in a good way, in a positive way, was the fact that the security of what our life is like, how are we going to maintain that stability? How are we going to maintain our way of life? And I really believe that the reason why there were so many people even outside of this immediate Gaylord area was because they felt that pressure as well.
Yeah.
They felt like the normality of life was slipping away. And that scared them a little bit, so there's a little bit of fear, but they wanted that security to say, okay, there is somebody that's willing to stand up. There's somebody that's going to say, we will keep you safe and secure. Now, obviously, there's a lot of chaos all around that, but there's that aspect of,
I need that security. I need to know that I'm safe, and I need to know that we can have some kind of a normal coming out of this.
I think that's a great point, and I think that's why we're seeing so much support for the Canadian truckers mm-hmm. and now this trucker convoy. I think it's headed towards D.C. You don't see a whole lot of it on the mainstream
yeah,
news,
on Telegram, but, I've seen it. On yeah. Rumble, I'm seeing it. I've yeah. seen it all over there. Like, there's tons and tons of that kind of conversation going on.
We've
there.
Had one come through Gaylord once already. I think we have another one coming through, depending on when this airs. There's a lot of support for these people that are standing up. And I mean, I can't imagine taking an 18-wheeler down to D.C.
Can you imagine how gridlocked that's going to be?
Can you imagine? I mean, just the fuel expense.
Oh, yeah.
I
oh,
mean,
absolutely.
The time. And I mean, these guys and gals, I'm sure, are supposed to be doing something else.
Right.
I don't think they're making any money driving down to D.C. You know, yeah. we're taking donations. Lots of other organizations are taking donations.
Right.
But I think these people that can't, this is an opportunity for them to show their support in the same way that you receive those gift cards from those other folks. It's impressive to me to see continually, of course, we're still in the news because there's some state Supreme Court stuff happening and our case is not resolved. So it that kind of helps keep our narrative live, if you will.
Yeah.
So it keeps people engaged. Oh, although over the summertime, thankfully, we didn't have a lot of that because we had resolved all the other stuff and we were just waiting on the health department stuff. So we kind of just got to be back to normal and talked about barbecue and the usual stuff for a while. And then it kind of ramped up again with the appeal this winter. So it's going to probably be the same thing again. We're going to have another lull coming up here because state Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals. It's going to have a few things going. So again, it's, you know, the wheels of justice move kind of slow. So it's important for us to try and keep our narrative out there going.
Oh, 100%.
Especially coming into an election and some of this other stuff. And
right.
We're trying to maintain that correct position because, you know, I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I call myself an independent. I call myself a libertarian, doesn't mean that I can't caucus in either direction.
Right.
And it's a little bit outside of what we're talking about, but at some point we're going to have to start, you know, working together because the system is not made to be run made to be run, you know, in the two-party system that we have. But
yeah.
It's important for us to keep that conversation going for us about what it is that we're involved with because it's not done yet.
Well, and if you noticed, in any good company, what they're always doing is looking for the stories, which is what you do as far as with Iron Pig. You're always looking for the stories. And sometimes, and I've done this in my entire sales career, every time it's what is a great example or a great story of somebody that did something or made an impression, whatever that was with your company. And I tell the story because obviously I own Alpine Brick, and I tell this one story because these things come up. If you keep your eyes out, you can see them. We had this 9-year-old kid when we were doing a brick build, a brick challenge, and he came in. He was the first one in line. He was with his mom. They got signed up. He's 9 years old. We go ahead and run the whole challenge, and he's all excited through the entire challenge. We get done with it, and I said, "How was it?" "It was the best day ever." I'm like, "It was better than your birthdays?" "Yeah, my birthdays." And his mom's in the background laughing. But it's those kinds of things that people can say, "I want that for my kid."
Yeah.
And it's a good. It's an influential good. It's not. I'm not trying to manipulate. It's like, this is what we can do when yeah. we do a challenge or a brick challenge or a brick event or whatever. This is what we can do.
And that memory is going to last for
100%, man. And that's what the value is there. It's just like, that's where some of the excitement comes in, yeah. the opportunity comes into play. Like, all of those things are there. I don't need to feed in on the fear, like, "You're going to miss out." Like, nah.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, what you guys do is very cool to me beyond just Legos being available, but the experience that you guys offer in the store over there to me is what sets you guys apart from anything else.
Our goal. That's our theme.
Yeah.
Like, and it's our purpose, truly.
It's a big deal. You know, a lot of resorts and restaurants, anybody in hospitality is really trying to create that experience.
Yeah.
We do here, obviously, as well. As soon as you come in the door, the music, you know, the atmosphere, the smells, I mean, that whole thing, we're taking it slightly to the next level. What you guys are doing with the interaction between parents and children – and providing that opportunity, that is a lasting memory.
Yep.
Beyond and including, I should say, the opportunity that you guys provide between a parent and a child for that growth experience, with the interaction right there.
Right. So
the kids are on these tablets too much, man. Yeah.
The logic behind that is now I have people telling my story.
Right. Right.
That's the key, right?
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what the ultimate goal is we want to give an experience. We want to have something that is, that story is so powerful that it gets retold by somebody else on my behalf.
Right.
And you see this, any good stories, like we hear things and they get embellished and whatever, and I get that, but you'll hear about stories of Olympic athletes, the one guy that blew out his Achilles and his dad came down. How many times have we seen that? And I get emotional when I see that because the dad came down, put his arm around him and walked him across the line. That's a powerful story,
right?
A supportive story. And when multiple people retell that story, it's impressive. And I could, there's stories that I've had that people have told me, and then we retell them. That's exactly what the whole point is of the story. That's how we connect. That's how we market. Because if somebody can retell our story, man, you got it. You got it.
First person referral marketing, something like that.
Well, I see like the third or fourth person.
You know what I mean?
Because when it goes down the line, it gets better and better and better, right?
It is. We have seen that too, where at first when we were the only ones out there flapping in the wind, dear. I shouldn't say the only ones, but the only ones that were making a really big stink about it on purpose.
Yeah.
We had plenty of support on social media, in the restaurant, but there was exponential numbers of upset and angry people. And at that time, we could kind of understand because there was so much unknown when this this first happened. And it was easy for people to label us as COVID deniers or mask holes or any of this stuff.
Well, let me I'll let you finish the thought there, but it's interesting. Again, remember I said consumer beware? At that point right there, now that the CDC has flipped and everybody has flipped on all of this stuff, it's like, dude, come on. Consumer beware. Next time... You fool me once, okay. Fool me twice.
Shame on. Yeah. We've seen, a dramatic reversal. I can't even say reversal because we had so much support. And obviously lots of upset, angry people, lots of vitriol, lots of ridiculous comments that, you know, we've talked about, you know, ad nauseum before and kind of poked fun at. But it is nice now to see other folks stepping forward. We've had a couple of other, I shouldn't say we, there are some other lawsuits that have had some effect, you know, like I said before, the truckers. Somebody had even commented that they're about a year late, and it's like, well, I can't disagree with that, but you know, you can't be upset and say, you know, it's a year late now. But I'm not even really sure where I was going with that, but it's interesting now to see the other side of the coin, like you were saying, with some of the studies, you know, the John Hopkins study
a lot. I think the main thing, and then let me tie that together, because it's an action. They have gotten to the point where they are going to now act, which tells me that their emotional value or their emotional levels are high enough to be able to institute that act. So a year ago, they may not have had that emotional point to be able to say, I will act on what it is that you did. You had that in your whole arena of, you know, the bubble that within where you're at with Iron Pig, you had enough emotional value to say, I will act. Whereas there's not everybody had that same. And so now we're starting to see this emotional impact where people are just, I don't want to call it anger, but it is kind of like an anger. They're just done.
Yeah, fed up.
Right. And and their emotional levels have now amped up to the point where they're willing to act. Whether it's the fact that they feel insecure or they're afraid that their lives are going to change or whatever that is, that it's, you have to have emotional level high enough in order to be able to act. And that's the way it is across the board, whether it's within politics, whether it's within business, your own personal life. You have to have enough emotional level to be able to want to change your own personal habits, your own personal routines. You have to.
It's very easy to get caught up. And, you know, I'm lucky to have some people in my life that counsel me in a way that, I'm very sarcastic and like to joke and poke fun. And sometimes It can be taken out of context or potentially taken the wrong way. And I'm thankful that I have, you know, when we did the Kiss Me, I'm Contagious t-shirt last year, that was one of those things that, you know, was obviously misinterpreted. But we were trying to bring a little bit of levity.
Purposely misinterpreted.
And to a degree, correct, because we're trying to bring a little bit of levity to the situation in that particular situation. Yeah. And oftentimes, many of these things that we shine a spotlight on.
Of us in this generation, we get it, though. You know, like, that was one of the things I find it super funny. But I also watched the space shuttle blow up and went back to school. So, right. I mean, like, there's a little bit of that level for me.
Right. You know, it's just one of those things that we kind of keep trying to push the train forward. But in a way that we're trying to still tell the story that we were originally here for in the beginning for us, which was... you know, our fight for, not our fight against, and it was our fight for our business, mm-hmm. you know, our employees and the bills that we have to pay, the bills that they have to pay, the lack of leadership November of 2020 with no plan. We're just going to restaurants down. We were forced into a position that we had to take. We're fortunate that we have such an amazing following. We had a record year last year, record first quarter so far of this year. I never in a million years thought that I would ever be sitting here, you know, doing a podcast. I would not, you know, on the news talking about politics. You know, I said before we started recording, I got an invitation to the Oversight Committee to come and tell our story. Yeah. And I say our story because it's not just me. I'm the face of it. My wife, you know, our entire, you know, 25-person crew that we've got here.
You said this earlier, whether on air or off air, you said the fact that there was so much of a weight that both you as well as the entire staff had to handle, because not only were they handling their own emotions, they were also getting the emotions from both sides. I mean, you had the positive and the negative, and they were feeling that from both sides. And I still remember the video when the guy came down and ripped the license off the wall. I mean, you can't imagine how much of an impact that's going to have on the employees. Like, dude, am I going to be able to pay my rent? Am I going to be able to get food on the table for my kids? Like, that's a serious thought, and that's a very emotional time. But it's just that's what institutes the action.
I couldn't just lay there and at night trying to sleep and not do anything. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but I just couldn't. I had to do something, and if I was going to go out of business, it was going to be on my own terms. And we just decided from there that that's what we wanted to do, and this was what we wanted to
accomplish. It was a core value.
And bringing it back, I'm thankful that I've got people in my life that kind of keep me on those rails, so to speak, because it is very easy to get emotional or feel fearful. I mean, we had at one point 6 government agencies coming after us. And that's intimidating. Mm-hmm. On top of everything it already takes to run an operation of any kind of small business, not easy.
Yeah, no, and so you're talking about things, and it's interesting. We were talking about the marketing, and there's multiple layers inside. So just to be clear, as we talk about this is just one speech out of many different things that I've given, many different talks, and you have to layer things. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't have the correct layers and the correct foundation, so going back to this, the vision, the mission, and the core values. And I know we're off topic from marketing, but if you don't have those down, it's almost impossible to craft your story,
right,
to craft your marketing.
So that's where I'm going with that, is they keep me on this particular path, mm-hmm. making sure that the story is correct, that we want to tell, that supports our core mission of standing up against tyranny in November of 2020. And some of the other stuff that we do is very tongue-in-cheek and fun, but that's part of
that's
what we do.
Though.
That's
like
part of
part
what
of
we
Trump.
Do.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is, you know, an opportunity for us to continue that narrative going in the right direction and not get upset about something over here or over there, but maintain that storyline going forward.
Absolutely.
And that's important for me, to not get derailed by some crazy thing over here, over there. We keep our eyes on a lot of different storylines going on that impact what we're doing. But at the end of the day, you know, we're here to risk it for the brisket. Yeah. We're here to have fun. It's one of those things that we just, our it used to be much easier when we were just talking about barbecue.
Yeah.
Now there are so many other facets to this story of our marketing that we have to tell in the right way. People are gonna get their own ideas, and I always say it's not my responsibility. I'm only responsible for what I say, not for what you understand.
I would suggest though that what you have done is you've matured into a brand. Before it was just barbecue. Now you've actually matured into a brand. It's an identifier, and it's something that it's like a talkable thing. Like people actually talk. So you've matured into that. When you mature into a brand, the storylines are all going to be there. And what I want to make this one point, because this is really absolutely critical. As a business owner, as an individual, you have the choice to either listen to the false narrative of what everybody is telling you, which is what has been happening over a couple of years. You either have the choice to listen to that false narrative, or you have the choice to create your own narrative,
mm-hmm.
create your own stories. And that is a really hard thing sometimes, because the voices of the false narrative are everywhere. And we've sometimes grown up with them. It's our parents. Yeah. It's our society telling us we have to go to college rather than be an entrepreneur. Mm. It's the, like, there's,
that's
so,
a big one for
there's
me.
So many of these, right? And they're all these false narratives. And what we have to do is actually come back to our own lives, look at that vision. What is it that point, our purpose in life? The mission is, how do we actually accomplish that? And then the core values are, these are the things that we will die over. We will lose everything over our core values. That leads us into, and remember, like I said, these are layers here, that leads us into the actual marketing message. And inside of that marketing message bubble, we now have these stories, and we connect the emotional value to that. So like there's many layers. That's what I love, the complexity of business is, it's not just... You can take a lot of what we said earlier in the podcast, go back, you can find the five emotions, you can actually write those down, like, yeah, this is what we're going to do. But there's layers here, and businesses are layers, and how you craft that story, how you create your narrative is absolutely key.
Yeah.
Absolutely key.
Tim, thank you so much for coming and hanging out today. We can sit here. I sat here for 5 hours with my attorney yesterday, and I should have recorded the whole dang thing. But thank you for taking the time.
Absolutely.
I know you're really busy. Tim is a man of many talents. Right here next to us at the Iron Pig is Alpine Brick Exchange. It's a great store.
Yeah.
Stop in there if you get a chance. Come by here, have something to eat. Drop the kids off, come over here, have a drink, whatever you want to do. Bring the kids, bring everybody. It's a great time.
It's an experience.
Very
totally
great
experience. Yeah.
Unlike anything that you're going to get around here, that is definitely for sure.
Yep.
Tim is also, like I said, a man of many talents and does several other things, as you can tell.
Yeah. Teaching, speaking, coaching, consulting.
Where can they find information?
TimKroll.com is
perfect.
The best and easiest place. You can contact me there. You'll find all of my socials there, but TimKroll.com. And it's just spelled like my name, which you'll see in the details.
Perfect. All right. That's about all the time we have for today. Again, thanks, Tim, for
Absolutely.
Joining us today. I'm sure we'll have you back on about as regularly as we potentially can. And, you know, I'm always going to lean on you for as much as I can. And I always say you never want to be the smartest guy in the room.
only a certain.
I will always see. And you're so humble.
Yeah.
I knew you were going to say that. And the other thing, too, is that, you know, I always say, you know, you seek out people with fruit on the tree. And that is especially true in my case. So I always try and lean on people that have a little bit of more expertise than I do, because I certainly don't know it all, and we'll go from there. Thanks again,
Sounds good,
Tim. Murphy's Law Podcast. Thanks for joining us.